You can do everything, public expenses. It's 11 o'clock. We'll start our workshop up again. Mr. Allen, administration.
Yes, so Melissa and I are going to tag team administration. I'm going to start off with revenue, and then she will do expenses. So tax revenue, we've pretty much already talked about for today, since we don't know tax valuation and can't really state a rate. So we're just tying it to growth in population and inflation. So no change there from earlier. So total $55,576,903, a 6.5% increase. Interest income for capital lease, and I'm going to tie that to the Wayland building lease. And you can see it changes. One goes down 3,017 and one's 3,007 plus. It's a payment. Part of it's allocated to interest, part of it to principal. As the principal comes down, the interest goes down. So that's why you see a decrease in interest for this year compared to last. Investment income, averaging $55 million at 4%, so 2.2. Miscellaneous income, none for this year. And then tobacco settlement proceeds. So the last several years, we've exceeded what we've budgeted. We have been budgeting $800,000. We're budgeting $900,000 this year. We got $1.2 million last year. But it changes year to year. There's no way for me to predict truly how much it's going to be. But since we have been exceeded, closing that gap just a little bit. And that's it for revenue. Oh, thanks, Shannon, because I did forget about that. And so most of you have been through this process before and have seen it in an Excel format, what we call the green bar. The budgets you're seeing this year, the detail we're going to be going through, is from the new system. It's a printout from Oracle. And it's changing our process a bit. And so typically, when we looked at the green bars in the past, this is what we'd kind of call this part of the presentation when we're looking at operating expenses. You wouldn't see payroll on those printouts on the screen, and you wouldn't see capital on the screens. And so we're not asking the managers to go through, again, the payroll and the capital. So they're going to be focusing on the operating expenses, even though you can see that payroll expense there. So just wanted to clarify and kind of keep them away from something they weren't expecting. Okay.
So operating expenses within the admin department, you're going to see an increase over last year's budget of 109, a little bit more, 109 to 92. And these come for four main areas. Contracted services, where we're engaging an AI consultant to help us get our governance, our data uses, our accepted uses policies written and trained our staff on AI because it's coming whether we want it to or not. And so we want to get started off on a good foot. So that's $50,000 in that extra from last year. Our contractual obligations, you see an increase of 24 plus thousand for the county appraisal district and the tax collector, an increase of 9.9 thousand. Insurance, you see an $11,000 increase, and that's based on our commercial auto going up because of additional vehicles. And legal fees, with additional staff bring additional legal problems, and that's a $13,000 increase to the budget for our human resources based on how we're tracking this year and where we're going next year. So I'm happy to go line by line through all the others. They're all similar to last year or a little bit less than last year. So whatever best utilizes your time, I'm happy to speak to those items. Okay, with no guidance, we can go to the next one. Good deal.
All right, so next is EMS, and Chief Seek is going to present.
Overall, our general operating expense decreased.
Excuse me. Could you give us an indication of where we're at on these documents.
We're all floundering
over here trying to figure out where we're at.
What page are we on?
20 pages in, 007.
Well, wait a second. Do you still want to?
So do you have questions on administration still?
What's the code for that?
It's your
001 is administration. And let me look at your packet. Let me see what you have.
It's in order by department.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it.
So.
So we're still in administration.
This whole page represents administration.
Okay.
Melissa kind of hit high points from it. But we can take a slower look. Let's just take a break and kind of hit this, right?
Yeah.
I did the high points where we increased this spend by category. The rest remained the same or lower than the previous year. So that's what I did. But I can go line by line.
I think it would help if when you're going to one, you say 53150.
Okay.
Find that on our page.
Yeah. Because I'll be honest with you.
I don't have that on my page, but I will do that next time. Okay.
Yeah, we can see a little bit better up there than we actually can on these documents because I don't know about everybody. These are really hard to see.
So let's go from top to bottom and just go line by line.
I was okay until it came to EMS, and I'm trying to find where the EMS on there. What page that is?
It's about 20 pages in, Rob. It's all
okay.
1, 2, 3, and then you got to scroll all the way back.
Can you go to contracted services?
So do you want to talk about conferences for the new?
No, I don't, because we did not go up in that category. I'd like to talk about contracted services.
Okay, so the first two pages are administration, which is what she's covering.
Page number or the category.
Yeah.
I guess
that's
easier.
Yes, yeah.
So back to for the ones where we see increases would be 5330, which is contracted services. The additional to this one is the AI consultant for $50,000. Valley View and Scott Griffith say the same from previous year. The contractual obligations, county appraisal is 53310, and that goes up based on our contract with the appraisal district. The same is to be true for the tax collector. There's an increase there of $9,900 predicted. We get information from Tammy McRae's office as well as the appraisal district with actuals that we will have later on and replace those numbers. On insurance, which is 54900, the increase there of $11,000 plus is for our commercial auto over the previous year. And then legal fees, we have multiple different attorneys for different reasons. We have our general counsel, we have our human resources attorney, and our healthcare attorney. We're seeing increases in employees and increases in issues with our employees, which leads to an increase in our legal fees, so we increased that number by $13,000 this year. We have the $75,000 there because our insurance requires, once we hit that deductible on legal fees, it reverts over to them to decide who our counsel is and continue those services. So we have that budgeted in case we hit that number. All the remaining items are at or below where they were the previous year. So if you'd like to discuss any of those, I'm happy to do so. But in the interest of time, okay, thank you.
So the next topic real quickly is on page 10. So everybody.
007. And as Mr. Allen discussed, we won't. Are you going over revenue before we? Or we've already?
We've already okay. Covered revenue.
So we talked about EMS revenue when we began this morning. It was an increase over the previous budget of about 4%. That doesn't appear in just one account. And so let me turn to that page so that you kind of see where it is. Okay. So when you look at the top of the page and you see that heading that says revenue, and below there, you're going to see a series of accounts. That first section, and you'll see advanced life support, and go down, you'll see basic life support, then 40650 non-transport. Just kind of go down there until you get to EMS net revenue. It will be in bold. And so that whole section is that 4.6% increase in just the details of where they appear in the accounts. So you can see that the black numbers are revenue, and then the adjustments are in red. Those reduce our revenue to go down to our net revenue. Okay, is everyone good so far? Okay, and then that next line item is the ambulance supplemental payment program, budgeting at $1 million. We budgeted $1 million last year. We ended up actually receiving $1,035,000. So that's why you see that difference. Okay, Jane.
Interest income, we need to talk to that too. That's interest on your billings.
Okay, you're right. The next line item is 41250, interest income. Government payers will pay us interest if they're slow paying our EMS bills. And so that's just to kind of acknowledge that.
Who will do that?
Like the government payers, so Medicare, Medicaid.
VA pays it too. We just got a $200,000.
Yeah. Yeah, if they're slow, they will pay a little bit of interest for us. I think that's
what are standby fees?
So standby fees represent the Catfish Festival, the special event.
Football games.
Thank you.
The
football games. So any revenue we generate from those standbys revenue we realize from those events, we see as standby fees.
Separate from transport revenue, if we transport from that special event.
That fee is just for being there. If we transport a patient, there's an additional bill to the patient or their insurance.
Can you tell us what our billing policy is on that? Some events we charge standby fees for, others we don't. And another time, we have a drive-by ambulance.
Yes, we have an hourly rate, and it really depends. Is it a medic in a bag? Is it a complete ambulance? Or is it the UTV? And each of them have a specific rate, and it's an hourly rate. And then there's a drop-off fee for the UTV or the bike team, things like that. But we try to recover as much of that expense as we can, with the majority of it being payroll expense. All right. We'll go into the 007, the EMS budget. This is just specific to the EMS department, not all the other operating activities that we need to be able to reach the mission. So we'll go in and say, so we were able to deduct and trim. We got a deduction of $32,000 in 2027's fiscal budget compared to 2026. Those main drivers are business licenses. This year, we had to pay for our renewal to be able to provide EMS service through the state. We don't have to do that next year. That's a every other year occurrence. We've also seen a reduction in customer relations. Looking at that trend in that year over year, we were able to reduce there. The largest driver that you're going to see increase is property damage. I think that was a $11,500 increase. Over the past year, we have seen an increase in us damaging property. When we make a call, we at times scrape walls, hit gates, things like that. We repair those, and that's where a lot of that cost is coming from. This was in facilities last year, and because now we manage all the service recovery in EMS, it just comes out of the EMS budget, so we don't slow down the approval process to get that taken care of because we did damage somebody's property.
So are we doing any remedial training on driver ed in order to get this stuff cut down?
Yes, sir, we have. And so what we've done recently is we have revamped the whole driver program. Amy, Elvia, and a handful of the captains and some other tenured employees have all come together. They've enhanced our driving program. So now when we hire a new employee, it used to be, here's four shifts, go drive. Now we put them in an ambulance prior to sending them out. They drive around, along with the cone course and stuff we always do. They drive around one-on-one with the driver trainer to do that. And then as fleet accidents or incidents happen, there's typically some remediation along with that, unless it's just a total system problem, then we fix it. Yes, Ms. Peacock.
I had a question. So, and maybe it's just orienting me to the spreadsheet, but when you talked about damage and replacing personal property, you said there was a, we paid out $11,000 this year, but it's not reflected in the FY26 actual, or is that reflected on another line item?
No, the actuals probably haven't caught up. We got some open POs that haven't caught up. So that, so where, what's our actual now? Let me read it.
4,000.
Yes. Yeah, so I know we have a $1,800 pending that we're resolving right now for an awning that we ran into, and then there's some door damage at one of the fire stations that we had to repair as well. We just haven't gotten the quote and been able to expense it through the accounting process to reflect in the actual.
The 11,000 is your budget increase.
Yes, the 11,000 is the ask for the budget increase. It's a very, like when I went and looked at the last 4 years, some years it's very small, some years the expense is very large. It just happenstance. It's really a tough number to predict. It was. Mm-hmm. As far as you'll notice, there's some large variances in some of them now and compared to what we're asking for. So if you look at uniforms, there's a large variance there. We have about $35,000 open in POs. So that will hit that and add on to that $135,000 mark. And then last year, we were at $244,000 end of year. So I think we'll be very close to that number. And with growth.
Which line item are you talking about?
I'm sorry. You want
to? I do want to interject here, too, in terms of helping y'all follow on the page. Mm-hmm. When he says uniforms, our accounts, yes, they're numbered, but they also generally are alphabetical. So if you hear uniforms, you can go kind of towards the end. It's a help. It's a quick cheat, okay?
Alphabetical. That's.
James, it's need to know.
Yeah. So right now we're at 147. We got open POs. We were at 244 last year. End of year, we have a new hiring class coming up, a large one, 38. So we still have a lot of expense to happen between now and September 30th in this particular GL. Any questions on that before we move to training?
I didn't hear a word of it, so I can't tell you.
Okay. You want me to go back?
No, just talk louder.
Okay. I'm sorry. Okay. So we'll go up to
training.
Get it. So we'll go up to training. There's a large variance there, too. That is, we did not send as many to paramedic school this year. Our plans to send 22 next year. We changed our entrance and our eligibility for that program. There's just been less because we've raised the standard, which has resulted in the same amount of graduates. So I think our new program is working. Next year, we'd like to send 22. So that's why the variance is there. And also, there's a timing. While Lone Star provides very, the paramedic training is fantastic. Their accounting department is a little slow. So we have trouble getting those invoices in time. And so you'll see those start hitting towards the end of the fiscal year. Amy and we'll be reaching out to them trying to get those invoices so we can get them paid, because we still have spring on there as well that we haven't even invoiced out.
Good question.
Yes, ma'am.
Are you recycling uniforms, or you give every new hire a uniform?
We recycle uniforms. When our new hires, because we don't know if they're going to be here for 6 days or for 10 years, we try to recycle uniforms at that point, especially those more expensive things like jackets. We try to recycle. Each employee gets $600 a year to replace worn items. So boots, shirts, things like that. And so when you do that amongst 335 full and part-time employees, that number just adds up very quickly. And we also cover the horseshoe employees. Yeah, we've reduced this quite a bit year over year. It's just now we've gotten it to the point where we just can't trim it anymore due to growth.
Am I telling who horseshoe is?
Yeah, the horseshoe would be all the admin employees. So me, Chief Tobin, quality. Any other questions on the 007 budget? Anything you want me to expand on, sir?
No.
Okay, all right. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
So under revenue, I have $3,000 for the marathon. We get reimbursed for the units that we put out there. So that's where you'll see that one. It's new from this year because I didn't realize that we actually got paid for the marathon until this year. So that's kind of part of something you're learning about. So that's going to be the one revenue we have. As we kind of move down to the first line item, so CISM, that was moved back under my budget. Originally, it was a part of safety and preparedness, and then it kind of disappeared last year. Now we kind of put it back under mine so we can manage it. So CISM is what is basically for a large critical incident that we do a debrief. And so after major calls that are sometimes pediatric in nature or have a high fatality rate, after that call, there's a lot of emotions that run high. And so what we do is we gather those crews, and we have CISM-trained team members that run a debrief to help them kind of walk through the call and kind of process those emotions. And so that's what our team is there for. They also have pamphlets that they hand out, which is part of it. And that's those materials that we might have for some of our, I always forget her name. Amanda Scott does it. Who else? Yeah, so they hand up materials to help them kind of process through it after they go home, and then, of course, give them resources they can reach out to afterwards on their own if they so choose and need. So that's what those paperwork is for. The safety data sheets live in my budget because it's still part of safety. That's something we're required to have. That's all the chemicals that we have in our system utilized. We store it all online. That bills out actually next month. That's why it kind of always sits in there. I have four conferences scheduled for it, so Texas EMS. It's kind of a combination for me when it looks at conferences. So I also serve as part of the Emergency Medical Task Force. So when you look at disaster response, it all falls under TDEM, so Texas Department of Emergency Management. TDEM then breaks down for the EMS side under DSHES, and then DSHES breaks off a piece for the EMTF. So we're Region 6 inside of all eight of the regions for our area of the system we cover. So part of that is sitting on those meetings they have bi-monthly. They also coordinate with the conferences so that we can make changes to some of the things that are required, build out task books for training so the people that we send out the door are qualified. It kind of sets a standard across the entire state. So when we respond to Kerrville, the EMTF coordinator for Region 6 calls me. He says, hey, I need a whole bunch of stuff. I reach out to operations, and we coordinate with materials management and fleet to say, okay, what can we send to go help those people that need it. And that's kind of what the EMTF falls underneath. And so that's what those conferences are. The one conference that got moved underneath here this year is going to be the Texas Fire Chiefs Association meeting. So I also serve as our liaison between us and our 12 other fire department partners. And so to kind of get an understanding of what they're facing so that we're not just looking from an EMS side, like we understand that side, but they have two jobs. So they have a foot in the fire world and they have a foot in the EMS world. And so that we can at least anticipate some of the changes that they may be facing that can restrict them. By attending that conference here in Texas, we have the ability to kind of get a little more insight into things that we may need to do as an EMS service that could help them out. Any questions about any of my other conferences? Just so we can save time for y'all.
Yeah,
Yeah, the Texas EMS conference is held up in Austin, right?
Fort Worth this year. Yes, sir.
Okay.
And on the, can you tell me on the last meeting that was attended by multiples?
Where is it?
So they have a conference, they have it on page 12.
Okay. Thanks. I'm just going to be able to show it to them.
So you have a handout that has conferences and training. On the very last page, it has conferences attended by multiple departments. So page 12, so you can see the other departments that are attending Texas EMS.
I'm still trying to figure out how the money comes in revenue for EMS for the UTV. When it's used for events and things like that. And the money's coming in because of an event. It's not coming in for a disaster response or anything else.
So
is the UTV under?
Stop it. It didn't work. Seeks told me to change it and it didn't work.
Yeah. So is the UTV not under EMS or, I mean, is it? It's under emergency management or?
Jason's role is when he helps plan special events, he helps review the incident action plan for the event that says this is how many people are coming, this is our medical response plan. So the purchase of the UTV and capital is under his department. Once we actually go to the event and bill the vendor for our hours, that revenue gets showed in EMS instead of in his department.
But it's showing here miscellaneous income for the UTV for the Woodlands Marathon.
Oh, so for the marathon, we have to, the spread is very wide. So we have to work with the fire departments and they bring their UTVs to help staff it. And then we bill them, they pay us the money. So it's a pass through.
Okay, so still goes back to my initial question. That's EMS, not emergency management.
Yeah, I mean, that's a...
I'm just questioning why.
I see what your question is. That makes sense.
Revenue for EMS rather than revenue for emergency management.
It's a good question, Mr. Bagley. We need to look and see how we're matching that expense to the revenue and in which department. We're going to take a look to see.
It's a good catch.
Typically would fall under standby fees, which would typically fall under EMS, would be where you would see the revenue. And so we need to see how we're matching the expense and the revenue.
The other part of that is if they're getting the revenue, then they should be taking care of the maintenance for the vehicle too. So, you know, who's funding for the maintenance on the UTV? Oh, is that coming out of EMS or?
Okay, so I think we're mixing some things here. So, for the UTV that we own,
right,
we pay that maintenance.
Right.
And if it's deployed and if it generates revenue, it's hitting EMS under standby fees. Okay, so that's the one that we own. And if we have another one next year, if y'all agree to include that in the budget, then any revenue it generated would occur in standby fees. For the Woodlands Marathon, we contracted with fire departments and rented UTVs from them this past year and in previous years. Okay. And that rental includes the actual asset, the UTV, and some staff.
Okay.
And so that expense hits either this account or this department or EMS. And I will run that down. Its revenue is going to hit EMS. So we need to just make sure we're budgeting to actual, like it's, we've got things matched up appropriately, and we'll confirm.
Okay.
So here's the contracted services that we use, right? So, and that's might be why the number is here, because all the invoices come to me, and then I submit for the POs, and then it goes up, and then we reimburse the fire departments for the utilization of their equipment. And we also do the same thing for Ironman as well. What sits in my budget because they send me all the invoices, then I process the POs or submit the POs for payout, and then they go out.
So you see the Woodlands Marathon here, that 3,000.
I see it. I'm just trying to figure out the difference between emergency management, which I worked in for almost 19 years, and EMS. They're not the same.
No, my role is kind of blended, right? So as the emergency preparedness manager here, like I blend part of being the liaison between the fire departments, and then I also oversee special events as kind of that part of that same thing. So like all the special event requests come through, we review the special event requests, process the contracts, send the contracts out if they are going to be reimbursed for it, and then set up everything else on the emergency management side as well. It's kind of a blended role.
So I got a quick question about the Ironman. You got the cost of $17,000.
Yes, sir.
Is this just one cost that to do Ironman, and then there's another total amount you get paid paid by Ironman once you've finished? Or
so we'll get an amount from Ironman for being available, and then for any services that we provide, ambulance runs, those are not billed to Ironman. They're billed to basically the patient, whether they have insurance, whether they're a Medicare patient, you know, whatever is the appropriate way to bill that patient. So we get reimbursed separately outside of the contract if we actually provide a service.
So I guess what I'm getting at is this is an accounting issue. Obviously, $17,000 is not all the expenses that you would have during Ironman.
$17,000 is the UTV. So we have to put up 13 UTVs that we don't have the ability to do our own. So we contract with the majority of our fire departments in the county. I'll send a UTV and a driver, and they bring their apparatus here. We put a medic on with them. They are here from right around 5 a.m. to about midnight, 1 o'clock, when it all closes down. And then they invoice us a flat rate per hour, and then per utilization of the UTV.
Right. Okay.
And that
This is an accounting. You got everything separated out
right
by departments for, Ironman doesn't just show up as an item. It's split out among all the different departments. The costs and
the revenue, any revenue generated from it, yes, it'll be in a separate department.
Now, I will go on record to say that Iron Man is a loser. We don't make money off of Iron Man. Yes.
You're saying Iron Man is a loser?
Yes.
That's like saying, no, I'm just joking.
Yeah, that didn't come out well, did it?
Yeah, that's why. We don't come ahead in revenue. We do get revenue, but we don't come ahead. The revenue would be billing, EMS transport billing. That's the only revenue from Iron Man. Yeah.
Then I misspoke.
Yeah.
It still showed the revenue does show up in a different department. The revenue, Iron Man is not paying us to deploy there.
No, we're good.
We sort of had this conversation last year. And the conversation was maybe having a discussion with Iron Man about how much it costs us in reality versus how much they're paying us. Did we have that conversation with Iron Man, and if you actually talk to Iron Man, is he really cool?
We've got a lot of tattoos.
Well, I think James has something to add.
I mean, we had the conversation. It's mixed because there's township representation, there's Iron Man representation, and we were able to at least discuss how much we provide the event. And they tell us nobody runs a better medical covered event than the Woodlands, and then also what they're able to do for law enforcement, which they 1099, and then they recognize there's a discrepancy there. Our hope would be next year that we could rectify that and at least get some compensation from Ironman for the amount of resources we provide the event. I think that drowning this year also sparks that conversation even more because everybody's necks out there to support their event, which brings a great deal of revenue to Ironman and the Woodlands, frankly.
So do you bill them what you bill them and they pay what they pay, or?
For Ironman, for the patients we transport, we treat them like every other patient. Ironman, we don't send them a bill for our hours like other events. and that's historically how it's been. The bigger that race has gotten, the more stretched it makes us operationally, the more that the board and us are like, we've got to get some compensation for this, because doing it for free is not in anybody's best interest. And
I understand it's probably good public relations.
Correct. It's good training for us. It's good public relations. It's good, but financially, it's the opposite.
Are you saying the township is... they are the main organization that puts that sponsors Ironman, or they're just part of it?
They allow it to happen in the township, so there's a...
Memorial Hermann sponsors it.
Sponsor, correct.
Memorial Hermann, okay.
Is the sponsor. Yeah.
Okay. You know that 501c3 non-taxed... sorry, guys, I can't...
And there'll be another expense for Ironman. We'll see. Because it falls under me and that I'm responsible for running it, that's kind of why all this stuff's in there. That's why the revenue is probably at the very top of it. If it needs to be moved, we can move it to make it make where it needs to be at.
You know, Ironman, I guess Ironman thinks it's a privilege for you to provide services for Ironman. We do a very, very, very good job and have for a long time. They make a lot of money. They don't pay out any. So it becomes really a political question. Is us being part of the greater Woodlands and Montgomery County community with everybody else who's donating their time and us getting not much revenue, how many of our patients we take to the hospital we charge for that, do we back out and say, go get a contract service to provide for Ironman? You know, that's a...
I think the discussion we had last year, and I think it still applies, is obviously it's worthwhile PR, as Jackie pointed out, and as it's grown, we need somebody there, obviously. But whoever runs the organization, we need to have a discussion with them about how much we're getting compensated for what we're doing. And I realize that part of it is just individuals, and that's, I'm not talking about those situations. I'm talking about Ironman itself. And, you know, it may be a nonprofit organization, I don't know, but we need to have that discussion, and because what we're providing is costing us money, and we just need to be compensated for it, is all I'm trying to say.
We will do that. I don't think we did it as well as we should have last year. We talked about it, but we didn't really go push anything. So we will do that this year.
All right, so we're going to move down to training uniforms. So Safety Safari is one of the things that we do every single year. That's where we bring our crews in, and we have them do their physical agility test, and then they do their driver cone course. The training portions right here, that there's a lot of trainings that our region participates in, and so that we have the funding to actually go to. Every once in a while, they have to spend the night in a hotel, and so we would cover that cost if they need to go someplace to do some regional training. We're down to Fort Bend or further out to allow our crews to train with their crews to try to better our service and better theirs as well. CISM is kind of a big one this year. So our CISM is trained really well in the after a major response. The class that their team lead and their team is asked, is they can go, it's called Mental Health First Aid for First Responders. So what this class is designed to do is to give them the tools and some training into how to recognize people that might not have a trigger point. They might have a trigger call that went on, but are approaching that crisis mode, that we can identify them before they get to crisis and try to intervene and help them. So they do pulse checks every single month. Two team members go out. They bring some snacks, some coolers. They go to all the hospitals. They try to visit as many people as they can and ask questions and see how they're doing and how they're having support. They're basing what they're viewing and how they're seeing people off of a after-disaster response versus a pre-disaster response. And that's kind of what this course would do, is give them the skills and the training so they can kind of pick up on some of those key points that they haven't been trained on or they don't see, so that we can hopefully intervene before it ever becomes a true issue for them. That's the addition for that. The last part is under uniforms is we have had ballistic vests on our units for the last 10 years. This past year, they all expired. They hit their 10-year mark, and they all had to be pulled off the unit to be placed out of service. We would like to replace those. The option that we look at is kind of modeling ourselves off of like San Antonio Fire and Austin Travis County, where they actually put the units and the vests on the medic units out in the field for every truck that they have. As much as we don't want to put our crews in any kind of extra danger, the job has kind of had to shift to do so, so we can respond to an active school shooter or an active shooter at a business or a place, and that we might have to ask our crews to provide that medical care in what would be considered a warm zone, where there isn't an active threat, but there's always that higher potential level in there than there is me sitting in this building right now. And so to give them that protective equipment so that while they're doing administering those life-saving treatments and they're taking care of those people as they're waiting for units to come and transport them to the hospital, that would be what it would look like. Now, previously, we put it on of our district chiefs. As the district chiefs have become busier and as our system's gotten busier and we've gotten more spread out with trucks, it's very hard to have that crew wait until the district chief gets there before they would have that equipment. So we'd be able to actually put two sets on every ambulance in the system, along with two spares in every district chief, Tahoe, and all the squads.
Okay, I'll tell you right now, I'm against this. I've been against this program from the start. We do not belong in the warm zone. We do not belong in the hot zone. We need to stage back and go in when it's clear. We should never put our people in harm's way. And I don't care what you do with a ballistic vest. I was a cop. There's too many spaces on your body that can be taken out if there's an active shooter, and you don't know if there's an active shooter still or not. I've gone through the exercise. I've been through the whole program here, and it's not right. We should not have any of our medics going into a warm zone where there's a possibility of them getting shot, killed, or harmed, because they absolutely do no good to the patient or to the cops or to the fire department for saving anybody else's lives if theirs is at danger.
I appreciate that and your passion, Mr. Bagley, for sure. And in many ways, I agree. But also the world that we live in, EMS agencies and fire departments as a best practice, for example, in a school shooting, law enforcement's going to go in and immediately try and...
And that's their job.
And
it's the fireman's job to go into a burning building. It's not our job to go in to a burning building. It's not our job to go into an active shooter or a warm shooter facility. It's not our job to jump out of a two-story window and rappel out of a two-story building, which we've gone through all of this in the past. It's not right. And I don't care if somebody else needs to get their credentials so they can get certified as a unit. If they want to get certified, let them become a paramedic and be a cop or whatever, and they can do the same things that we can do inside that building. In fact, most of them are required to do that. There's no reason that our people should ever be put in that position.
Having said that, what is our policy on that? Because if you're going to send them in there, then we need to look at the PPE. But if there's not a policy in place that says you must send someone in there, then we just need to know what kind of discussion we need to have.
Right. So our training by nature, so going back to the school shooting, is that law enforcement will go in and immediately try to eliminate the threat. As law enforcement's going in, you'll see fire nationally in the United States, fire and EMS outside with ballistic vests, and then shortly after, law enforcement's clearing hallways, we're going behind them and putting tourniquets on people who have been shot to keep them alive until we can move them by training. So our policy would be that we would initially stage. Some units would stage, and some units are going to move up to outside the school or into the hallway of a school so that we can go in there and provide life-saving medical training or treatment to the patients that are in there. So our goal is to try to save as many people as we can. And we're in a tough spot now because the things have evolved in the United States now. I would say we don't want our people in there. Some of our people are going in there, whether they have a vest or not. They're going to go in there with the team, and they're going to provide care, and some people are not. That's the fact of the matter. We've had vests for the last 10 years, and now they've expired. So we collectively, this is a big discussion for the board and for us. What are we going to do? We've had vests. Now we don't have vests. Are we going to go back to having? How are we going to manage that as an organization and as a board? It's a big decision.
Well, just go ahead and put them in harm's way and forget about the fact that all of the law enforcement and all of the fire department that are going in there know to how to apply a tourniquet. They know how to do the quick stop, stopping the blood.
Yeah.
And that's the same things we're doing. You're going to do what you want to do. I'm just telling you, I don't think it's right.
Yeah, and I completely support that train of thought. I'm just trying to tell you where we're at today, because this is a budget that you all have to approve, and I'm trying to provide as much information as I can so that you can make the decision. It's a difficult decision.
How many times have we used them real world?
Thankfully,
zero. That would be the goal.
We also have not had a school shooting here, so that's what we try to do, the risk versus the benefit. We haven't had one, knock on wood. We're at more risk of dying on I-45 getting hit by a drunk driver at 2 a.m. than we are of an active shooter. And the active shooter that we had this time last year in the Woodlands at one of the bars, these things are over before we get there, statistically, are over before we get there. But also we feel, as at least an organization, we have to provide our people with the safety equipment, because they could potentially be in harm's way. So it's difficult. It's difficult.
So I want to interject here for a second. This says option one. We didn't put both options because it'd be doubling up, and I threw a fit because I didn't want to show double expense. But there's a second option that doesn't cost as much, that he can lay out to you what that would look like operationally.
So we would basically elect to go back to what we've done for the past 10 years. Right? We put four sets on every District Chief Tahoe. I accounted for the expansion squads as well, because it gives more of a reach. And then we'd also put a couple in the back of the emergency management vehicle as well. That way we can expand it and expand up to two apparatus in 2028. I agree with the sentiment. Like, I don't want our people ever going in. And every after-action review, like, the goal is to go in that door and to save as many lives as we can. And if we wait for law enforcement to fully clear a building, if you look at Conroe High School, before that building become warm to cold, it's going to take them 6 hours. And that's kind of what we look at. And I completely agree. Like, this is also one of the things that we're going to order if you elect to, and that we hope every day that it's just going to sit there on the truck for another 10 years and never, ever, ever use it. But we participate in bi-monthly drills with law enforcement, with the fire departments, all 12 fire departments, all 16-ish law enforcement agencies all participate in active shooter response drills, and it tours around the county so that we can prepare ourselves for what we hope will never happen, but it's going to be the worst call in Montgomery County history.
I'd like to say one thing. Several years ago, downtown Dallas had an active shooter. And when EMS got there, even though they were supposed to stand down, and even though they didn't have any vest, EMS got in the hot zone, pulling people out. So they were going basically against orders to stay back until they were supposed to go in. That may be just human nature. But that's the only incident that I know of that's happened. I don't want my people going in anyway. I think we need to wait until they're pulled out. And if they are going to go in, would they even take the time to put on a vest, or are they just going to beat their chest and go in? I don't know.
Well, the other issue I have with the vests is you're taking two on a vehicle. Your vest won't fit me, and mine won't fit you. And how are we going to do that with the crews that we have out there? Because they're not all the same sizes. And so if you've only got the two vests in one chief's vehicle, who's going to get to go in? Because you may not have a vest that fits anybody.
Yeah, the vests that they provide for fire and EMS are a one-size fits about 80% of the population they have found. So there are going to be some that are going to be, the vest is going to be too big, and some that the vest...
There's no way that 80% is going to cover our crews. When you look at the women that we have, that are 5'1" or less, and you, then we've got guys your size, there's no way that the two people are going to be able to wear those vests. Look at our numbers. Look at.
April Curry to him.
Pardon me?
April Curry to him.
Exactly.
That's what I was thinking,
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, we have these same debates for the last 6 months planning this budget. So we try to do vest one size fits most. Personalized vests for every individual, we're looking at. We're
million.
Half a million to $1 million.
Yeah, really
big.
Yeah. It's not just the vest, it's all the rest that goes.
Yeah, it's the vest, helmet, there's equipment that's in that. Law enforcement's trained to put on tourniquets. During those situations, they're going in with one thing in mind. They're trying to eliminate the threat. And we carry a lot. We can carry a lot more tourniquets, and we're focused on providing care. It's a difficult decision for all of us. We're just trying to
be
as transparent.
What about them expires? What makes them expire?
A date by the manufacturer. I don't mean that mess, but, yeah, like, you know.
I wouldn't think would go bad. And so unless ammunition becomes more lethal, I don't understand why they expire.
I can answer. So the reason it expires is because the only studies they ever do are on law enforcement. And law enforcement wear theirs every single day, so they have degrading and weather and sweat and everything else that builds up. And nobody's ever done one where they don't wear it every single day. That's why they expire.
I think you could, I would wear one past the expiration date, but.
I've still got my bulletproof vest from the 70s.
Yeah.
Yours is definitely outdated. It may no longer fit.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, there's yeah, I don't know. It's tough.
So did you discuss what your alternate method in cost was?
The alternate method would be, if we switch back to basically the same layout that we've had for the last 10 years, would be $86,836.45.
All we're replacing is the ceramics?
So it would be replace the whole kits, because the ones that we have, they are a square shape. They don't make square-shaped Kevlar anymore. Okay. So we would have to update the entire package to one, and then you could replace the Kevlar every time it expires after that.
Well, maybe we should get Kevlar like we used in the military, and it's still good.
So just point of clarification, these ballistic vests, they have pistol rounds? Because now we're talking about ceramics, which I think of rifle rounds. So what is your proposal that makes up these numbers?
So they're level 3A armor with the rifle plate in the front and the rear. And so the vests that we currently have, I could not, I looked for days and days, and I could not find just the replacement panels. The plates are easy, but the plates only cover the center mass. All the Kevlar that surrounds the rest of the body, including the cummerbund that's designed to help that one size mythos, that Kevlar and the shape that we bought is no longer manufactured in rectangular squares. So we'd have to go to a curvature one that allows for firing EMS. It's designed for them to allow them to have more range of motion in their chest and in their arms. And then that Kevlar for the future could be, inserts could be replaced as well as the plate. So it's both. It's the maximum protection we can have.
86,000
buy us? 86,000 would buy us 40 vests, including 40 plate, and it's 40 vests, 80 plates, and then 40 helmets, which is enough for us to deploy on. We would put eight, so we'd put it on all four of the district chiefs, the deputy chief, the three expansion squads, the EM truck, and still have a couple of spares that we could put on in the event we expanded another squad or district chief or something like that.
So now we have to replace the helmets too?
Yes, sir.
Really?
Yeah, those are good for 10 years.
I've got a motorcycle helmet that I can still ride with and wear that's 25 years old. It's going to protect my head. And I've got a Kevlar helmet still from the military that will still protect my head. I don't get all of this.
I kind of apply it to like medical supplies, like the plastic suction canister that we have in the back of the ambulance. It has an expiration date. Even though it's climate controlled, protected from UV light, we still have to throw them away because they have a stamp-on date by the manufacturer.
Yeah, the risk would be the helmet
is expired, and then someone gets a gunshot wound to the head, and then they say you put an expired helmet on, there's organizational risk and liability in that. We're with you. We know that this is not an easy decision at all. We share some of the same frustration.
Making a lot of money.
Yeah, Washington lobbyists getting kickbacks and okay, but let's not go there.
Any other questions I can answer?
No, thank you very much for coming.
Do you want the two options? I mean, I don't know how you want to consider these things, but is there, do you need to print out or something more than what you have now to help mull this over the next 60 days?
I'd like to see
60 days.
The two of them side by side.
Okay, Jason.
Yes.
Sorry. Okay. Can I ask one? I know we skipped over one thing. I wanted to understand the telephone piece.
Oh, got it.
Is this replacing something that is already existing, or and how many is that? Because it looks like it's doubled, right?
All right, so that's actually my cell phone because I'm the emergency preparedness manager. So it's my cell phone cost for the year. I have a cellular iPad that I carry around instead of a hotspot that I use for because a lot of times I'm out of the building. So that pays for the data for my coverage there. Then we have our Starlink that we carry as an emergency backup. We've identified some places in the county that in the event that we have a situation going on that we lose cell cover, we can deploy that Starlink out for them. These are two cell phone iPads for the rapid deployment team. So when we deploy our assets out to help on a state deployment, we send them to those guys because they have a little bit more. They have cell phone coverage. They also have a different profile. So they have open Wi-Fi because they may have to connect to a Starlink depending on the region they're deployed in. And so we have those. And then the CISM cell phone, their on-call phone, because there's a 24/7, 365 on-call that gets published every day. That is the coverage for their cell phone for the year.
So,
and this,
Jason,
is the fee, not for the phone itself. This is the fee for
the monthly
plan. The monthly plan to have those phones active.
Yes.
And compared to this last budget, is some of this new service? What represents incremental increase?
The only two increases. One is that I failed to account for the second deployment iPad last year in my budget, my first year to budget, and I kind of messed that part up, so I apologize for that. And then CISM kind of lived in... Right, it was on their personal phone, and so we were going to move them from a personal phone to a MCHD business phone. And so that lives under here because the rest of their budget lives under mine.
Now, we had this conversation last year, but all these different cell phone services like Starlink and all the rest, these are all separated out by department, but you do have it's like one overall account, correct? Okay.
Yes, sir.
So Starlink will show up in other places as we go through this, correct?
IT has
here?
One.
IT has one, and he has
So
just twice.
Yes, sir. IT has one for alarm as the backup to the backup to the backup in case we, right?
IT has ones because, and particularly in East County, during flood events and electrical events, we can set up the Starlink at 30, and it'll cover two other stations where they no longer have activity, and that could happen in any other portion of the county as well, but that's where it's been utilized as well at the Ironman because of the congestion there and the pull on Wi-Fi during a large-scale event, the county fair. We're able to put up our Starlink and enhance our ability to continue to have Wi-Fi services.
Okay, all right.
That was the one that lives in IT.
I'm sorry. So for the rapid deployment team,
yes.
Are they the same people, or are these different people from EMS?
So they're the same people in EMS. So we have a roster of 23 people that volunteer to be on this team. They kind of go through a process of vetting before they get put on the team so we can send them out to the state. But we, like I said, they're kind of hit or miss. There's not really a way to do it. So we get reimbursed. We deploy them out to the state. The state reimburses everything that we send out at a set their hourly rate and everything else. So we pay the upfront cost, and the state reimburses us the full amount.
So,
if they deploy.
So this is a fee. So they would not be using this iPad on a regular basis at all, but we're paying a fee for it.
Correct. Because we don't get a lot of notice when they have to deploy out the door. So it's easier for us to just have it on versus having it flipped on and flipped off and hope that Verizon get it on in time.
So EMS quality, is that the next topic? I say move up lunch. That's my vote.
That's a great decision.
For the future, quality is page 36.
Oh, okay. Quality is on 36. So we can start that after lunch. And we'll be back from lunch at, I don't know, 12:30? Or 12? It's 12 noon right now, isn't it? If you want to keep, 12:15 then?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
No, 12:30 is good.
12:30. All right. Thank you.